All right. They should be able to hear you now. Go ahead and speak for me. Whoa, nope. Oh, wait. Why am I not seeing? All right, go ahead and talk for me.
Okay, I'm here.
Perfect. They get that. There we go. Now they can hear you. They couldn't hear you a second ago. All right, yeah, cool. So, yeah, if you could, just go ahead and, give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself. Who are you?
So my name is Sanasta Kaluchi. Family and friends call me Kai.
Kai.
My middle name is Ukiah, so it's short for Ukiah. I was in the 12 tribes communities for almost 8 years. It was from the spring of 2005 until fall 2012, so about 7.5 years. The 12 tribes, they call themselves the community most often. There's a lot of different names for them,
Sure.
but it's a very controlling cult.
Sure. We'll get into them in just a second. I just kind of want to give them an idea of who you are a little bit as a person. So yeah, Kai, you're 33 years old. What sort of stuff do you like to do?
Well, I live in northern Michigan, so I like to go fishing in the summertime and go on hikes with my family. I have a wife now and a 4-year-old son.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, that's cool.
Thanks. Yeah, the whole time I was in the community, I was single, and
Yeah.
we'll get into that
Yeah, for sure,
later
for sure.
too, but it is a rough place for single people.
Okay, cool.
I think any ex-12 tribes member will agree with me on that one.
Yeah. So I guess if you could describe to us what were you doing before you joined the community? What was your life track like before that point?
Well, directly, immediately before joining, I was living in Detroit. I had gotten my first apartment. It was really the only time in my life that I lived alone. It lasted a year. And I was working at a fast food restaurant in Midtown Detroit. It was a rough job, to say the least. I
Sure.
was working as a cashier, getting $5.50 an hour. At the time, minimum wage was $5.15 an hour. And also, I was raised by a single mom, and she herself didn't know much about finances and didn't care much about making money. And so I really didn't have anybody to teach me about life. And so in that regard, I'd say the 12 tribes really helped me a lot to learn about, just how to survive, how to work hard. But yeah, I wasn't doing much before joining the community. And
Okay. So and and I just want to re this I was going to say this before, but I lost my train of thought, so I just moved on. But you and I talked a little bit about this through email, but I just want to restate it here in front of the audience. If I ask you any question that you're not comfortable answering as we go through this, just tell me and we'll move on away from
right.
that. And a lot of these questions, this interview is going to be a little bit more personal than the last one because obviously you joined a cult. So
Yes,
there's a lot of,
and I lived
yes,
it.
exactly. So a lot of this is going to be very personal. And I'm fully cognizant of that. So, you might be feel like you're comfortable right now and everything's cool right now, but we get into something you don't want to talk about, let me know, we'll move on. And who you were before you joined the cult is, or the community, whatever you want to call it, is very important, because, or at least to me it is. So you mentioned you were in your early 20s, right? You have kind of a dead-end job, right? Working fast food in a bad neighborhood. Were you single? Did you have like a girlfriend or anything before that?
No, I was single, and there was a few things that happened, I guess, with girls. And I talk about it in my book. I'm not like shy or embarrassed about it. I talk about in my book how I was a 28-year-old virgin when I got married. So I was kind of a loser in that regard.
No, yeah,
But
sure.
a lot of that had to do with fear. And a lot of it had to do with a deep conviction within myself, being raised by a single mom who had determined at a very early age that she was going to become a single mom.
Oof.
And yeah, it was a rough situation. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm the victim of that. I'm the one that had to, reap the consequences of her decision. And so I had this conviction that I was not going to sleep with anybody that I wasn't willing to give my life to. Like I wasn't just going to hook up with somebody. I wanted to, settle down and have a relationship that was deep. I wasn't going to sleep with anybody that I wasn't willing to raise a child with, because I felt like that was the reason for, having those sexual desires to begin with is procreation.
Sure. So, I hold this view, and the chat is reiterating this as we talk. Being a virgin does not make you a loser. That's just
Okay.
that you know
Good to
if
know people support
yeah
that.
yeah no it's cool, man. I had that same view until I was 19 and I couldn't control myself anymore. I said screw it. So I understand where you're. Where your mindset was there, but I'm really curious. I just and I do think that this applies. I think it's the fact that and you know, correct me if I misheard you, but did you say your mother wanted to be a single mother?
Yes, her story is actually pretty interesting too. I mean, she was raised Catholic, and she told me that as a 4-year-old girl, surrounded by her Catholic relatives, she told them that she wanted to be a single mother when she grew up.
Oof. Oof.
And she did that.
Yeah. Yep.
She accomplished her
Well,
goal.
and I'm not a therapist, but I am 35 years old, so I've been on the planet a little bit. And I can see why I can see how that could happen. You know, you've got a and I don't mean this disrespectful to you or your mother in any way, but you know, if you've got a single mother household or a single parent household, doesn't even have to be a single mother. But you've got a single mother raising a young man, a lot of stuff that she's not going to be able to teach you
Right.
as a man that you probably need to know. So yeah, everything's kind of clicking there. I can see why you would feel some sort of lacking in community or whatever to get you to where you might want to join a group like the community. So we at this point we're you're you know what were you 21, 22 when
Yeah,
you
I had just turned 21.
okay so 21-year-old Kai working at a fast food place. You're single, virgin. I'm assuming you weren't very happy with life, right? You probably weren't overjoyed with how things were going. How were you introduced to the community? How did that spring up in your life? What was the first thing?
Okay, well, that actually starts with how I met my dad, which I also write about in my book, Better Than a Turkish Prison. So I had met my dad like a year before joining the community, and he is a very religious guy who's got like his own religion going. And he talked about how he's pretty sure that the world's going to end soon. At that time, he was saying 2012. This was back in 2005. And he said that a safe place to be would be in a community where they grow their own food. And so I just started looking online for communes, and specifically like organic farms, because that was the kind of thing that I was interested in at the time. And I found the WWOF program, which stands for Willing Workers on Organic Farms. And they had a listing on their website, which I've heard that now they have taken off the 12 tribes from their listings, because they're a cult. But at that time, they were still listed. All of the 12 tribes farms were on the WWOF website. So I found the Stepping Stone Farm, which is in Wablo, Missouri. And I emailed them, and I got a response from Ben Shimon, and that guy ended up being like a really important influence on me when I did show up.
Okay, cool. So your had you and your father had a relationship up until you met him, or had is did like you met him
No,
and then no.
I literally met him for the first time when I was 19. I had never talked to him before that.
Gotcha.
My mom didn't say much about him.
Gotcha.
And the way I met him was kind of a crazy story too, which is also in the book,
Yeah,
of course.
just so everybody knows, the book is if you want to read his book, definitely you should check it out. Link is in the description down below. Better than a Turkish prison. I asked that question because you know with when you this is just a common theme throughout society. You see a fatherless household, the young man particularly coming out of that situation always feels a big lack of community and all that good stuff. So, yeah, when your father enters your life at 19, he's very religious. He's into all this stuff, and he starts talking. It just makes sense to me. So, that's you. That's how you got introduced. What was the gentleman's name that you got introduced to?
Ben Shimon.
Ben Shimon. Okay. So, what was the next step? You met Ben Shimon, you contacted the organization through this website, you get in contact with this Ben Shimon, then what happens?
Well, then I ask if I can visit, and they're more than willing to let me visit, and so I get a bus ticket and I leave everything I have except for like a suitcase in my apartment. I leave my apartment unlocked. I owed rent, so I just left, and I figured it was even,
Right, sure.
but actually it wasn't, because I had some very valuable heirlooms, so I think they ended up getting the better deal on
Sure. And
that.
at this point, was there any indication that it was a religious group, or did you think it was just farming?
Yeah. And here's another thing. I had been interested in the military, actually, but I have sickle cell anemia. So when I called the Army recruiting office and asked, can I still join if I have sickle cell anemia? It was just a flat out no, you cannot.
Right.
So when I was looking into all these different groups, what was going on in my mind at the time was I was thinking, I'm kind of drawn to the military on the one hand because of like the organization and the cleanliness and stuff, but on the other hand, I'm drawn to the hippie groups. But then the downside of like the hippie groups with their communes and the organic food and all that is a lot of what I've seen with them. And I did have some experience growing up with hippie groups, because my mom's basically a hippie. A lot of what I've seen with that is, it's not so organized and not so clean. So the 12 tribes seem like a perfect blend of like this militaristic type of organization that has a lot of rules, and religion is part of that. They dictate every part of your life. So it's got the organization, the cleanliness, but then they've got the whole organic type of hippie vibe going too. So it seemed like the best of both worlds at the time.
So you knew this going in. You knew it was
Yeah.
it did the word cult cross your mind as you were heading there,
Oh, of
or
course. Another funny thing is the last movie I watched before I left my apartment, it was The Village. by M. Night Shyamalan. I
Oh,
don't know if
okay.
you've seen that one,
Yeah,
but
I'm familiar with it.
yeah,
That is quite
kind
funny.
of a coincidence there.
Okay, so kind of and I think you know, we've kind of already brushed on this in a big way over the last 10, 15 minutes, but you know, you're sitting there, you see this organization that is culty. We'll use the word culty, right? And you're aware of that beforehand, where you know it's very religious, you know they work hard, and it's almost militaristic, and they dictate all parts of your life. You knew all this stuff going in.
Yes,
So
I did.
what was the main why would you? Because I'm the opposite. I did join the military. I did go in the military, but I'm very anti being told what to do. So I couldn't see myself if knowing that. Like I might, you know, I might be down for some organic farming or something. You know what I'm saying? To get some exercise or whatever. But what knowing all these things going in, what did you say to yourself to convince yourself this was a good idea?
That I needed it, and I felt like the world was going to end. And
Okay.
also, there was a lot of things about society in general that I was just discontent with. I considered myself to be an advocate to the poor, not realizing my own poverty at the time. But looking at all the injustice in that regard, the wealth, income gap, I don't know, the list just goes on and on. There's a lot of people that,
Okay.
everybody can point to all these flaws in society. And the 12 tribes seem to have all the answers.
Okay, so you had a million and one questions and no answers, and this group seemed like they had the answers. What they were doing fit what you thought the world should be doing.
Absolutely, yeah. And the first thought I had before I was actually baptized into the group, the thought I had that caused me to want to be baptized was I thought, what if the whole world lived like this? When I had that thought, keep in mind, that's how I felt back then, based on how I perceived the group with my very limited experience of the group.
Sure.
And I thought, and the answer that I gave to myself was, if the whole world lived like this, it'd be great.
Right. Okay.
There'd be no poverty,
Yeah.
no rich, no poor. It'd be great. Everyone living together. It'd be a lot of the environmental issues you see would be solved. Just,
Sure.
yeah.
And we got away from this a little bit because I wanted to dig into a little bit more of what happened there. So you contact him through this website, you speak with this guy, and I'm assuming you pack all your stuff up, like you said, you just brought
Yeah.
one suitcase, left everything else behind. What was it like when you first got there, when you first rolled into the camp? How did you get there even? Did you take a
Okay,
bus
so
or?
yeah, I took a Greyhound bus. I had a couple $100 on me. That was it, everything, all I had. Clothes and a couple $100. And this strange bearded guy picks me up at the Springfield bus station, Springfield, Missouri. And his name's David, which is just the Hebrew version of
David,
David.
right?
And there's a lot of people named David in the community. It just means beloved, so it's a popular name. Anyway, he's got this weird, creepy smile, beard, ponytail, fist-length ponytail. All the men have these. So he drives me about an hour drive from Springfield to the very small town of Wablo. We pass just nothing but cornfields and cows, and
Right.
it's way out in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
And we pull into this, after going down this dirt road for a long ways, pull into this very clean looking farm. And First thing I see, and this is very to my story, is a black man. And my father is black, and he was afraid. His concern when I told him I was joining this group was that he had heard that they're racist. So I see this black man, and he looks super happy. And all of a sudden, all that fear I had is just dispelled immediately.
So, and I was going to ask you, as this guy's driving you down this long dirt road, what were some of the things going through your mind? And I'm assuming one of them was the racism thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, rural southern Missouri, I was a little concerned. I'm mixed race, so I didn't know what was going to happen. Of
Sure.
course, I didn't have very many other options at that time. Also, we were having a pretty deep, heavy conversation. One of the first things David chose to say to me was, "We've made a covenant to die to ourselves." And he like kind of throws his head back and laughs as he's saying it. And he was kind of an oddball. I learned later on that he was odd even for the 12 tribes.
Gotcha.
So we have this deep conversation. I didn't know what that meant because I wasn't religious. I had like zero background in religion, pretty much. I'd never been to church.
Sure.
So when someone says we've made a covenant to die to ourselves, like I thought, so you've made a promise to kill yourself? Like how what does that mean?
Right. And did he say that to you when he picked you up, or in the process of driving to the
Yeah,
place?
in the process of driving me, so I was
Gotcha.
already in a moving vehicle
Got
in
it,
the middle of nowhere.
right. There was no turning back at that point, right? You
Yeah.
were there. So what else? Other than the racism, was there any thought of what the fuck am I doing? I need to get out of this car and start walking back. Was there any of that?
No, honestly, I was ready to try it out.
Okay.
I mean, I
You
had
were
no better options.
No, I hear you. You had a direction and you were moving full force towards it. I can respect that. So,
Yeah.
okay. So you get to the end of this long dirt road with David, the weird guy, and you get there. What you said it was a clean farm. Kind of, if you could, just kind of give us an etching of the layout of this place. What did it look like?
Yeah, so we pass this big field on our right, and he points out it's 50 acres. He says it's their hay field. And he turns the corner around the hay field. There's this long line of trees. He says it's an old railroad that used to run through there. And so there's trees on either side. The property owner in these parts, they own the railroad if it runs through their property. And so that was part of, their farm, and they had goats out there that were fenced into the old railroad. The tracks had already been taken up and everything. We pass that and we see a bunch of barns. Each one of them is white with blue trim. Now this isn't something that like all the communities do. It just happened to be how they decided to paint the buildings in Wablo, which, by the way, it's no longer there. The farm in Wablo is gone now.
Gotcha.
But anyway, they had all the barns were freshly painted. They had two big houses. One of them they called the building. It was the more modern looking one, and another one was a classic farmhouse style. They called it the farmhouse, and they were all just white with blue trim. So they
Gotcha.
were, freshly painted, and the fields were nicely mowed, and flowers everywhere. It was springtime. And then there was this orchard as we pull into the driveway, and it's just all blossoms throughout the orchard. It's just really beautiful.
Okay, so it's a beautiful place. There's no There's no big scary sign any place, warning you to get the hell out, right? There's no
Right.
it doesn't look like a haunted house where it's all broken and decrepit and you think, wow, I should not go in there. This place was nice looking. It was clean. Everything was freshly painted and there's flowers and you're full steam ahead and there's nothing popping up saying this is a bad idea because everything looks so wonderful. Is that about right?
Yep, that about
Perfect.
sums it up.
Perfect. So, and this just occurred to me while you were talking there. I'm just curious. Did you have like a bedroom or was it like dormitory style?
All the single men are put together in one room.
Okay.
If there had been single women, they'd be put together in one room.
Okay. So it's like a dorm, kind of like
Yeah,
a
and then
open
the
bed.
families each have their room.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So you get to this place. It's really nice and clean and fresh and everything's wonderful. What happens next? How do you get introduced to, everybody? Go ahead and walk us through that first day.
Yeah, so everyone that's around comes out and greets me, and they're super friendly. And just, for the viewers, if you do want to check them out, just like out of curiosity or whatever, that's how you'll be treated. You'll be just like lavished with attention and hospitality. Don't worry, the food is safe. You can drink the tea that they serve you. It's not like gonna kill you or anything. And so they just like lavish you with all this attention and surround you and say, we're glad you're here, and just all smiles and hugs and
Jessica H just said this, and this mirrors my own thinking. Overly friendly people instantly put me on edge. That's what she said. And
yeah,
I'm kind of
she's
this.
smart.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Everybody that I've ever known that has been super, super friendly, it's a facade. It's always
Right.
there's something else behind that they're trying to hide. In my own experience, anyway. Somebody else says now I'm suspicious of the tea. All
It's
right.
yerba mate. It's safe. Don't worry.
All right. So what happens next? That first day. What else do you go through? You said everybody was super friendly. Was there like a leader of this? I know it's much.
Yes.
Personally, I know that it's much bigger than this one camp. But can you
Oh, yeah.
kind of explain that? Who's the leader at your camp, and how does the whole organization kind of work top down?
Right. So, hands down, Naboth was the leader of the Stepping Stone Farm.
Okay.
And not only was he the leader back in 2005, he was the leader still in 2012 after having moved around a lot. When I left, he was still the leader, and he'd been in the community since the very beginning back in Chattanooga. Based on his longevity there and his knowledge of all the teachings and stuff, yeah, he was hands down the authority there. And then below him was David, who had picked me up. He's a married man, so then, according to the hierarchy, the married men are above the single men. And then below David was Ben Shimon, who was my shepherd, and he was single, so that's why he was, below David and them both in the whole hierarchy.
Okay, all right. So you got Nabosh, David, and then your shepherd.
Yep.
Okay.
He was
And
assigned to be my shepherd, I should
gotcha.
specify.
So I think the first obvious question is, what is a shepherd?
Basically, just they tell you what to do, and you work alongside of them.
So kind of like a guide. Which I
Yeah.
guess is another word for shepherd.
Yeah.
So they're like your on the military, kind of like your battle buddy, except this guy's got experience.
Right.
Okay, so and then David, what this hierarchy that you're talking about, was that a formal hierarchy or was it kind of informal?
Well, formal in the sense that the men have leadership first, with the exception of Hayanik. She's Yonake's wife. Yonake and Hayanik are the founders of the whole movement. So, I later on in the story, I got to live with Yonake and Hayanik, and she definitely tells a lot of the apostles, the really high up men. She definitely, is not afraid to correct them or, tell them what's what. But aside from Hayanik, there's the women aren't in leadership over the men. So, formally, the men have superiority over the women. I wouldn't say that they formally believe in single brothers being lower than married, but they certainly, pretty much in all cases, they respect married men above single
Sure.
men.
It's informal. It's an
Yeah,
informal.
right.
So, like, and that's kind of my question, Nabish, am I saying that right? Nabish,
Naboth.
Naboth,
Yep.
Naboth, was he the formal leader of your group or
Yes,
was informal?
he was actually appointed as the leader of
Okay.
the Stepping Stone Farm.
Gotcha. And could you describe him for us? What was he like?
He's a tall white guy. They all had beards, ponytails. All the ponytails were fist length. And he's a strong, hardworking guy.
Was he, what was his personality like? What was he like as a person?
Well, I didn't really see it at first, but he's pretty laid back compared to other leaders in the community. I learned that later. I thought that all the communities were like this first community that I encountered. But as it turns out, they were very, very complacent compared to other communities. So he wasn't like a hardcore keep the traditions type of guy. He was all about the work for the most part.
Sure.
And the most, I guess, the odd characteristic that stands out to me the most about him was, like, he'd be giving teachings, which, you basically just everyone sits around the table, and he's got this notebook of all the different teachings that come straight from the big apostles, the big leaders at the top, primarily Yonake. So he's got all these teachings from Yonake, and he's reading them. He'd be like rubbing his leg full time as he's
Really?
reading these teachings, like rubbing his knee. I think he had some sort of thing with his blood vessels, so his legs would hurt a lot. But I didn't know that at the time. He'd just be like rubbing his leg. I thought it was a little strange.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So you would say he was kind of a nice guy. He
Yeah.
wasn't,
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he was, like I said, everyone was nice to me.
Gotcha. Okay, so what happened next that first day? You show up, everybody's being super nice. You kind of get the lay of the land. What happens next that first day?
I get put to work right away,
Right
which
away.
I appreciated it.
Sure.
Like after, tea and snacks or whatever, I get put to work on the farm with Ben Shimon, and I felt good about it. I liked having a purpose, something to do, and there was a time in my life where I felt like I was a moocher, just living
Yeah.
off of other people, and I didn't want to be like that anymore. I felt terrible when I was doing that.
Yep. Yeah,
So yeah,
that's
I appreciated the hard work, and I learned a lot about farming, so I appreciated that too.
sure, and that's common for men. We like to feel like we're being useful. So,
Right.
what were you doing? What that first day, what you said they put you to work, what were you doing specifically?
Yeah, so I was picking strawberries, and then they taught me how to milk a goat. And when I first started milking the goat, I thought it was weird. Like, I'm touching this animal's teats and milk is coming out. It's weird.
I grew up in the South, so that's not that weird to me.
Okay. Yeah. No, I got used to it quick.
Okay, yeah, cool. And so all right, so that probably, and then what? You know, you go through your work day, that first day they put you to work. I'm assuming you finish up work at some point and have dinner.
No, actually, after work, it's the preparation hour. It's what they call it.
So what's
And
that?
so people take showers and then they read their Bibles or they read from the teachings
Okay.
and they prepare for the gathering. And the gathering was, it was crazy. I describe it in my book too, and it was just unreal. Like I had never seen anything like it. Like everyone stands around in a circle and they just share whatever is, how they would say it is whatever's on your heart, like whatever the Holy Spirit inspires you to share. And the women are wearing head coverings and everybody wears these headbands. They're white headbands that are woven. They call them diadems. And then they just start, they burst out into song. Actually, I think the song came first and then the sharing.
Okay.
And they were singing this song. It's called Yahshua Hears Us in the Time of Trouble. Yahshua is how they say Jesus. It's like one possible Hebrew version of the name Jesus. So it's the name they use for the Messiah. And this song is all about like some boast in chariots and some in horses, but we will boast in the name of Yahshua. They have bowed down and they have fallen, but we rise and stand upright. And all the while outside, there's this vicious thunderstorm going on. This It was pretty common in Missouri, but this thunderstorm had just rolled in, and it's just like the thunder seemed to be echoing with the rhythm of the song. It was just crazy. Lightning crashing all around. It was really impressive, I have to say.
Okay, and the gathering, was this an every night thing, or did you
Yeah, it
just
was
happen to be
morning
there?
and evening, and they get that
Oh, okay.
from the Bible. First or Second Chronicles, I don't remember, but somewhere in the Bible it talks about how the priests gathered morning and evening to thank and praise the Lord.
Gotcha.
So that's what they do. They gather morning and evening every single day.
So can you kind of describe to us some of the things, because you mentioned there that people would shout out what was the Holy Ghost was had on their heart and things like that. I'm a Christian myself, so I kind of know what that means. But a lot of our guests here are atheists and have no experience with religion at all, so they have no idea what you're talking about. Can you kind of go through some of the things that people would say and some of the things you would hear and
Yeah, it would almost always start off with I'm thankful for or I'm grateful for. And it was supposed to tie into like what it was supposed to be relevant to the teachings that they had heard, most recently. And it was supposed to be relevant to what people had been sharing recently. So it kind of there's this kind of chain that flows together. And they talk about being in the flow of the prophets, meaning that you're speaking relatively the same thing as the last person that spoke.
Can you give me an example?
A hell of a lot of analogies, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Like metaphors, yeah, like I don't know, like what's a good example? Being connected to the vine, something they talked about a lot,
Okay.
meaning like listening to the Holy Spirit and being connected with everyone else that was there.
Okay, gotcha. So when it comes to this gathering, and I'm just trying to get a really good picture for everybody in the chat. Everybody, you guys, you come together, you sing. Is it like a hymn, or is it kind of ad hoc? How does that work?
Well, I would say, and I have heard a lot of Christian songs too. I've heard Christian songs and songs in the community. I'd say the community songs are way more intense, like the wrath of God and this and that. But a lot of them also, there's like a lot of really cheesy children's songs. So there's like silly, cheesy children's songs, and then there's like the wrath of God will come on all his enemies and every knee will bow and I don't know. There is a lot of really good music within the community. I will say that. The children that grow up there, they're taught instruments from a very early age, and there's a lot of discipline, a lot of pressure put on them, and so they become very talented. They grow up to write songs and starting as teenagers writing songs and playing music better than most adults could.
Gotcha.
So a lot of great music, and a lot of these people are very sincere about it. So they have a lot of emotion in what they're doing, and so you feel that, like as a guest, as a visitor, you come, and it's hard not to be impressed when you just feel this. You feel the feeling that they put into their music. It's just a very human emotion. It's natural to feel that way when someone is very clearly devoted to what they're doing. You can kind of sense that,
Sure, absolutely. Okay, so we got the singing, we've got the gathering where people are, talking about their experiences with the vines and whatnot. What next? What when you guys what happens after that?
So then they all lift their hands in a circle. And it's supposed to be only the people that are connected, which just means that you are in agreement with everybody else there and you're a baptized member of the community. So they come together, the ones wearing the diadems, they lift their hands, and I describe it in my book. It's kind of an awkward situation when everybody's in a circle and there's no clear leader within the gathering. It's just everybody can speak whenever they feel like it. So, when they're all lifting their hands and looking at each other, they don't close their eyes when they pray. A lot of times they'll interrupt each other when they go to pray, and then someone will be like, "Oh, I'm sorry. No, you go ahead. No, you go ahead." And so it's this like awkward moment that happened quite frequently.
Gotcha. Okay, so yeah, that's interesting. So you mentioned something there that I picked up on. That I want to ask you about. You mentioned that people raise their hands if they're baptized. Are there people that are a part of the community that are not baptized and are not allowed to raise their hands?
Well, for the most part, it's usually guests that have, new arrivals.
Like
They
yourself.
take their time. They don't baptize you immediately as soon as you want to be.
Gotcha.
They say they make sure that you're ready. Just looking back, I would say that what they're really saying there is make sure that you're brainwashed enough that you're probably not going to leave.
Right, that's what I was thinking too. I figured that might be where that was headed. So, okay, after the gathering finishes, is there any part of the gathering that we missed? Anything else that happens?
Well, they dance in a circle while they're singing their songs. They do Israeli circle dancing.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of
But,
that.
okay,
So,
yeah, that's it. That's pretty much it. They just
okay.
sing, dance, share, and then pray.
Okay. So what happens after the gathering?
Then after the gathering is dinner, and it's, all healthy food. Non-processed, usually a salad with every meal except breakfast. Breakfast is millet and eggs or like oatmeal. Here in America, millet is bird feed, but it's also a grain that's edible and healthy.
So you guys ate bird feed. Is that,
Yeah.
am I catching that right?
Yeah, it was all cheap, healthy food
Gotcha.
for the
And
most part.
was this stuff that I'm assuming this is stuff that you guys grew, right?
We didn't grow all of it.
Oh, okay. So you had to buy some of it?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get into that here in a little bit because
Yeah,
I
for
have some
sure. We'll get
questions.
into that later.
I'm kind of curious how that works, but so you go, you have dinner, and then I'm assuming that's when they show you to your bunk, where your bunk area was. What happens after
Yep,
that?
and it was literally a bunk bed.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's what I figured. Your dormitory style with the open bay. That's what I figured. Just like the military.
Exactly.
So I that night, what was there? So you have dinner. They showed you to your bunk, and then what? I'm sure you have like an hour or two before you have to go to sleep. Is there like a lights out? How does that work? Or is it
I
just
don't.
whenever you want to go to sleep?
No, I mean, obviously, yeah, they turn the lights out for the sake of whoever wants to go to sleep at that time. And that's after dinner and chores. So like all the milking chores, all the dishes, they don't usually go to bed before around 10 p.m. and they wake up pretty early too. They work on average around 16 hours a day. And this is all unpaid, mind you.
Sure.
Nobody's getting paid here.
Right. Well, you get the fruits of your labor, so to speak,
Yeah,
right? You get
and you
to
get room and board.
exactly, yeah.
So
So
I had a crazy dream that night, the first night that I was there,
okay.
because I was really worried the whole time I was in my apartment. Like I told you before, I was overdue on rent.
Right.
My landlady was banging on the door, and so I had this crazy dream that like there was no roof, and I was in my apartment. And landlady was banging on the door, and it was raining, and I was just soaked, just drenched in the rainwater, and I was cold, and it's just this horrible feeling, and I was scared and paranoid, and I wake up the next morning, and I'm warm and dry. And just really grateful to be there.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially after a dream like that. So
Yeah.
what was there often in cults, there's some sort of thing that keeps you from sleeping very well at night. Was there anything like that here? And just to give you an example of what I mean, so the audience doesn't think I'm crazy and they know where I'm pulling this from, Jim Jones would play recordings of himself all through the night, and he would often wake people up in the middle of the night, so that you were getting sleep, but you weren't getting like a full rest, 8 hours nonstop of sleep. Was there anything like that here?
No, not they didn't intentionally keep me from sleeping.
Okay. All right. I was just curious. So, okay. Yeah. So that's the first day. And I'm assuming most of your days were probably pretty similar, right? What you describe the typical day for me.
Yeah, you wake up early in the morning, you do the chores, you do the preparation hour. And actually, another thing, we were going there anyway with this, but another thing is if you are a single man, they teach you that you have to masturbate. And so, if you have an ejaculation, you have to take a shower before the gathering. And
Wait.
you take regular showers anyway,
Right.
but you always have to take a shower as soon as you have an ejaculation. And so like the morning gathering, usually you don't take a shower in the morning, but if you've had, like a wet dream or something,
Right.
then you have to take a shower in the morning.
So,
Right after the chores, and then you go to the gathering. You have to be clean and all that.
they teach you that you have to masturbate?
Yeah, and so this was like the first struggle I came across. Everything up until this part was like it was all just, sunshine and roses. But when I found out that every single man there masturbates, and I don't know, maybe it's because I didn't have any experience at all with religion, but I didn't expect that. I thought they were just like these. I don't know what I was thinking. I was really put off by that thought
Boy,
that even my shepherd, Ben Shimon, this guy that I idolized, I thought he was like Jesus.
yeah.
I was kind of put off by the thought that he masturbated. And then they teach that even the Messiah had to.
We're so I'm very curious about this because it's the opposite of all everything I've ever heard in being in mainstream religion. They always tell you to try and avoid doing that. But I have a couple of questions for you coming off of
Yeah, I'm
that.
sure.
So number one, do you, and if you don't remember, that's cool, but do you remember how they justified that? Where were they pulling from the Bible that you had to masturbate and you had to shower immediately afterwards? Where did that come from? Did they ground
Okay,
that in anything in the Bible?
well, those are two different parts.
Okay.
So first of all, the thing about having to is just like I guess that was based on just the natural, how the creator would have designed things type of argument more than a biblical argument. So it's like, it's going to come out anyway.
Right.
Might as well do it in a clean way. So, like, before you take a shower or whatever, you just, rub one off into the toilet and then you jump in the shower.
Gotcha.
So that's a lot better than letting it come out eventually after like weeks of these internal struggles of like trying really hard not to think about all of the other, the single women that are there, whatever thoughts could come to you. I think a lot of it had to do with just like preventing any sort of weird perversion from coming in.
Okay. And what about the
And
women?
then,
Where did they have to do, did they have to masturbate as well?
no, actually, it's a double standard here because if you were a woman and you masturbated, that'd be a sin because you're only doing it for pleasure.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I've heard that they've actually kicked women out. Obviously, I never witnessed that, but I've heard that they've actually kicked women out for masturbating. So, I mean, that's, I didn't witness it myself, so that's just a rumor,
Sure.
but.
Okay. So you have to masturbate. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think most men wouldn't have a problem with that because most men do it every day anyway. But you said that you and if you don't want to answer this, that's cool, but you said you were actually taken back by that. I'm curious, what was it about that that gave you pause to use a pun?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a sin. I didn't know.
Oh,
And
okay. All right.
they said it's not like the Christian denominations that do say it's a sin, that they mostly base it on the story of Onan in the book of Genesis. And they say that that's not really an accurate representation of what happened in that story, because in the actual story of Onan, he was told directly by God to impregnate his dead brother's wife, so that he could bring forth children for his brother who had died, and he pulled out. So that's not actually masturbation,
Gotcha.
that's pulling out. But it says that because he did that, because he disobeyed God and spilled his seed on the ground, that he was killed. And so a lot of Christians take that to mean don't ever spill your seed on the ground. But they say no, it's because he disobeyed a direct command from God. That's why he was, disciplined in that way.
Gotcha. Okay. So we were talking about what what the typical day looks like.
Yeah.
That's the first one.
Masturbation isn't the typical day. It's like every other day or every third day or something like
Gotcha.
that.
Okay. What is it kind of like up to you, like whenever you feel like you need to do it, or?
Yeah, it's like, and it's you're taught not to do it excessively, so not every single day, not several times a day would certainly be excessive,
Gotcha.
but twice a week just to keep your urges in check.
Sure. So so you spill your seed, you take a shower, then what? Typical day.
So that yeah, then the gathering in the morning. And breakfast after the gathering, which is like either millet and eggs or some sort of grain, oatmeal, whatever.
Sure. And
And
so I'm just curious about this because you mentioned bird seed before. You said it's like bird seed. Do you,
literally.
is it dry? Do you like eat it, the grain and the.
Yeah. Have you ever seen like a bird feeder? It's
Yeah.
got those little yellow balls in it.
Sure.
That's millet.
Okay.
Those
But you
little
didn't.
yellow balls, we ate those things like all the time, and it's
Okay.
gross.
Yeah, it doesn't sound wonderful. I was thinking maybe they mixed it with something to make it a little bit more palatable, but I guess not. Okay. What about after breakfast? What'd you do then? Go to work?
Yeah, so there's lots of different jobs. My job for the first few years was farming. But I also helped out with some construction jobs, painting, things like that. So they operate cafes and delis. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Yellow Deli or the Common Ground Cafe. And they in some communities they just come up with a unique name, their own kind of name. Like they've got the Blue Blinds Bakery in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Anyway, all those are operated by the community. So yeah, you just work really hard for a very long time, and then you have you got 3 square meals a day. You got breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you got the 2 gatherings every day.
And then you get your free time after that. Was there any free time during the day at all?
Not so much, no.
So you
There's
just
pretty much no free time.
gotcha. And it was all I'm assuming it was all either farming related work or upkeeping of the buildings and maintenance and stuff like that, right? How
Yeah.
were you like assigned a job or how did that work?
Yes. You definitely could not just do your own thing. You do what you're told. So yeah, farming, construction. Their construction crews pretty involved. Like they've got general contractors that are certified, and they do these big jobs. They build nursing homes, hotels.
And they're part of this, they're part of the community.
And they're part of this cult, yeah. But they all live together. It's a crazy thing. So like at the end of the day, they all go home together.
I'm just curious, if you know, if they're going out and building like nursing homes, presumably they're getting paid for that. Do they just give that money back to the community, or how does that
They're
work?
supposed to, yes.
Okay.
I have heard a few stories of embezzlement because it would be really easy. For, if you're working on a construction crew, just pocket some of
Oh, of
that.
course, yeah.
Or just like a lot of those construction crews, they had houses away from the community just while they were working on the job. Like during that time when I first joined, there was a big job going on in Kansas City. So it was several hours away from the other communities in Warsaw and in Wablo, Missouri. So they had to just for practical reasons, they had to have a house that they're renting at the time. So, a lot of the claims I've heard about embezzlement were really just not so much embezzlement, but more like
They're just keeping their own money.
eating different food. Like they'd and this actually happened to me one time. So it's not just a rumor. I can tell you from experience. I was given a pint of ice cream after a job once, like a whole pint of ice cream. And it was like high-end ice cream, Häagen-Dazs or something.
Right.
You would never be given something like that if you're just working on the farm.
Right.
So there's a lot of there was some, misuse of funds on the construction jobs and the construction households. But for the most part, yeah, they're supposed to bring all the money back to the community.
And just to be clear, when we say embezzlement or misuse of funds, we're talking about people that went out, did a job, earned money, and kept it, right?
Yeah,
Okay.
not the outside world's
Right.
definition of that, but
Exactly. I
you
just.
do kind of feel betrayed if you're just like working on a farm all
Sure.
day and
Well, that's, yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah, that's what it's supposed to foster. That's the whole point, right? You mentioned that there are these delis that they run, like the yellow deli, I think you called it. Is everything there? I'm guessing this is all stuff that you guys produced.
No, I think that they've wanted to head in that direction where it's like you produce it on the farm and then you sell it in the deli, but they didn't do that at all while I was there.
So what do they do?
They buy food from Sysco Food Services like every other restaurant.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
know, right? And I write about it in my book. I had actually written a paper. It's just this short 3-page paper. This was while I was living in the community in Hidden Knight, which was at that time it was like their headquarters, and it was where Yonake was living. And I write this paper that's kind of like an indictment of how they've gone off the path, but it's like based on what they taught me.
Right.
Because the pattern is it's supposed to be where you have these farms and they're growing all the food for the other communities, and then you have these city communities. So the city communities are bringing in the income, and they're supporting the farms monetarily, and the farms are bringing the food to the cafes and to the communities in the city to feed all the people first. And then, whatever's left, you bring to farmers markets or to the cafe or whatever. Well, they weren't really doing this at that time. They had this farm in Hillsboro, Virginia. And so I'm in Hidden Knight at the time, and the farmers from Hillsboro are just boasting about how they're growing, acres and acres of organic certified tomatoes. And all these turkeys, they're slaughtering hundreds and hundreds of turkeys every week, and they're selling all this food to Whole Foods, and they're super proud of it. And they do this whole slideshow, this whole presentation during this conference in Hidden Knight, and I'm witnessing this, and I'm like, this is sick. Like, there's this community not that far from you that runs a deli, and they're buying all of their food for their community from Whole Foods. So
Right.
like, how does that benefit you if you're selling to Whole Foods and then you have to turn around and buy from Whole Foods?
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, does it?
So yeah, I write this paper about it, and the farmers were really offended when I wrote this paper. A lot of the leaders were like, they thought it was great. And they typed it up and everything, but a lot of the farmers were just like, you're just really strong and opinionated, and you need to give that
Okay.
up.
So we're kind of moving into the area that I want to move into now anyway. What was it so we everybody's got a good understanding of who you are, how you got here, and what this place is like. Let's talk a little bit more about the people that were involved. So you mentioned a few times the lady that I've already forgotten her name. I want to say Yakima, but I know that's not right.
So
Yakima
hammock.
Hayemek. And who, what was the name of the actual leader again? Not of your camp, but the overall leader,
Yonate.
Yonate. And so these two were the heads, right? They were the big guys in charge. I'm assuming husband and
Yep.
wife, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And under them are all of, and I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture for the audience a little bit here. Under them are all of these different communities spread out all over the world, right? It's not just America, right?
Yeah, they were in like 9 different countries, but primarily in America.
Sure.
And there's good reason for that too. I think Americans value their freedom more than just about anybody else in the world. And so we don't question religious freedom. Like
Sure.
it's a basic principle that we all live by. Like we're not gonna tell somebody that they can't have their religion. And so that's why a lot of cults are able to flourish here.
Sure. And so what are these two people like? Are they what's their personality like? Did you have a lot of interaction with them, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so Hayamik is just like super bubbly. She's just she didn't at the time she didn't look as old as she was. Like, I think they're in their 70s now. I don't know. She might be a lot younger than Yonake. I don't know for sure, but she still had like blondish hair. It wasn't gray or anything. She was just always happy and bubbly and smiling and. But then she'd say these really intense things. Like there was this guy Shoer, and he was like one of the leaders of the tribe of Bigyaman, and she always called him Proud Shoer. And she just like would rebuke the leaders, just like without, no hesitation, just totally rebuke them, all of them, except for her husband.
Sure. So she wasn't a fan of the leaders of the communities, I guess.
I don't know. It was a weird dynamic.
Okay. And who were these apostles that you mentioned? So it sounded like there was some sort of group between the main leaders and the community leaders called the apostles, is that right?
Yeah, and it's mostly guys that were there from the very beginning. They were all men, like I said before. I don't know if Hamek's considered an apostle or not, but she'd be the only woman if she is. But Hakam is often considered like the right-hand guy of Yonake, and he was there from the beginning too in Chattanooga. And then I live with Samaic for a time. He's since passed away. And I live with Gamaliel, Seraph Gamaliel. He was he had a PhD in chemistry from MIT, so just a brilliant man. And David Zerubbabel was another one of the leaders there, and he also had some sort of degree, master's. He was a very brilliant man as well, but his degree was more in theology, I believe, and computer science. He had some sort of computer job before joining, so that was very useful to them too.
Gotcha. So what I'm curious, what did the apostles do? Like, what was their job in all this? Did they have a job?
I think most of them were tribal leaders, so they headed up a whole region.
Okay.
The regions are interesting too, like how they decided it. So they started off in Chattanooga, so that's the southeast in America, and the whole community at one point moved up to Island Pond, Vermont, and so there was no longer a community in the south. They all lived in the northeastern United States, and that's where they first established this concept of the 12 tribes. And so that became the first tribe, and they named it Yehuda, which is, the Hebrew version of Judah. And so after that, they moved to France, which is the tribe of Reuben. So this is all based on Jacob's 12 sons, Israel. Jacob was renamed Israel. The 12 sons of Israel. So the first one was Yehuda, and then Reuben, and then Gad, which the third place they were at was Canada. So it was Judah, Reuben, Gad, Asher is Australia, Naphtali is Brazil, Manasseh is the Midwestern United States,
Gotcha.
Shimon is Spain. Lviv was Germany. Issachar was the whole Spanish-speaking region of South America. And then Zebulun was England, and Yosef is the west coast of the United States. And then the last tribe became Binyamin, which was the southeastern United States. So they finally moved back to the southeastern. So it's like the first shall become last, you know, that whole thing.
Sure.
So Binyamin ended up being the last tribe. What's interesting about all of this is they have all these tribal regions. They completely leave out the two biggest continents on the planet. They leave out Asia and Africa.
Right. Okay.
And it's supposed to be this thing of like bringing about the whole planet becomes the kingdom of God on earth.
Right.
So like when Yahshua returns, the whole earth is going to be given back to him. And
Okay.
the 12 tribes are going to rule over this
Yeah.
kingdom.
So I mean, this organization sounds humongous. How many members do you think there are today?
Well, they would always tell you around 3,000. They've been saying that for decades.
Oh, so nobody.
I
It's
don't
got to
know
be
for
bigger than
sure.
that. It's got to be more than 3,000, right?
I don't know for sure. There's a few thoughts I have about it. The average is around 30 per community, but I've lived in a community that had more than 90 people in it. They have a list of locations on their website, 12tribes.org. So you can see the map there, and if you do like an average of around 30, you can get a lowball estimate of how many members they have per little dot on that map.
Okay.
But it's probably huge. And another thought I have about it is I don't think that they want to really disclose how many members they have.
Sure.
One of the things I was told by the leader of the tribe of Yosef was to be very cautious about telling people on the outside how many people are living in your specific community. And he had very good reason to say that. At that time, I was living in this attic in Vista, California. In this tiny little makeshift room, they put up these temporary walls, and it was me and this other single man living in this tiny little room in this big mansion. And there's like 95 people packed in here when the construction crew would come for the Sabbath celebrations. There'd be like 120 people.
Oh, wow.
So sure, it was a big house. But all these people packed in there, and they're having to make all these temporary walls. So he's saying, don't tell anybody how many people live here because, you know, they're going to get the safety inspectors or whatever, the fire. I don't know how those laws work, but, you
Right.
know, they could shut the place down because it's violating those fire safety rules.
Sure. Okay, so I'm curious, with a lot of and I know not all cults are the same, right? But the we only see the ones that really do bad shit. We don't see like nobody. I had never heard of this organization, and a lot of the people in the chat have never heard of it either. So clearly, there's not too many bad things going on there. Otherwise, they probably would have popped up on the radar at some point. But I'm curious with the leaders, the man, the husband and the wife, were they? I mean, you got to be curious. You've got to be aware of other cults out there, right? Like Jim Jones and David
Right, yeah.
Koresh. Do you see similarities between them and those people, or do you think it's a lot more benign than that?
It's definitely more benign than that, but I had my speculations. I speculated about the Shiners, which was this group of girls that was always with Hammock. I don't know what exactly they were up to, but there was this time I was in the Chattanooga house, and this was when we were working on the Yellow Deli in Chattanooga. I helped with some of the construction work, and the Shiners would always be hanging out in Yonake and Hammock's room with Yonake in there, and they're these group of young women, and they're basically like Hammock's servants, like her slaves. And so I don't know what they were doing in there, but I wonder if they were kind of like Yonake's slaves too, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, I'm with you. I know exactly what
I
you mean.
but that's just speculation. I didn't
Sure.
actually see anything, but they did hang out in his room a lot.
Okay, I got you. I'm with you. And I'm sure the chat's with you as well. In fact, Delusion Dispeller, I think, is laying it out for everybody very clearly there what you mean by
Okay.
that. Yes, and that's not that uncommon, actually. We find with these cults, it often seems to be a way for the leader to get him as much get laid as much as he can. So,
Right.
yeah. So, I'm curious. So we got a little bit of an idea of who these people are now. I'm really curious because you mentioned this earlier. You mentioned brainwashing. So what was that like? What do you, looking back on it now, what do you see clearly as, okay, that was them brainwashing me into this. What did you go through?
Well, first and foremost is giving up all of your possessions and all of your money. That immediately is them gaining total control over your life. Because someone like me, I didn't have any wealthy family members. I didn't have anyone that I was super close to that I would have felt comfortable going back to. So you're immediately just very dependent on them for survival. And then aside from that, there's just like the regular gatherings, morning and evening, with all the members of the community expected to speak, and just listening to this every single day, twice a day. And then on top of that, several teachings every single week. Three or four teachings a week, and they teach you everything. Like I mentioned before, it's every minute detail of your life, right down to how you wipe your butt. Like they literally have a teaching on how to wipe your butt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're to use no more than four squares of toilet paper. So you fold it up in a square, you wipe, you fold, you wipe, you fold, and then you're left with this tiny little square that you flush. And
Wow.
so every single detail of your life, there's a teaching for it. So, I mean, brainwashing, yeah, that's brainwashing right there.
Sure. And it definitely puts you into a very vulnerable position. Absolutely. Jessica H wants to know, did you find that other members had the same lack of family relationships that you had?
Yes, yeah, so that's another part of the brainwashing. You're taught that you are to sever ties. You burn your bridges. You're taught to do that. And they use, of course, the verses in Luke 14. And it's right before Luke 14:33. That's the verse they love to use, that nobody can be a disciple unless you give up all that you have.
Right.
So right before that, Jesus is talking about how you have to hate your own family to follow him. So, they say like anybody that won't join the community, you have to just leave them behind. You burn your bridges.
Okay, so I obviously then, you know, your mom's not coming to see you, right? Because I'm sure you did as they said to do, right?
Well, they can visit, and she did. My mom
Okay.
visited, my sister visited, but that was it. Nobody else in my family. I had a big, Italian family, Italian Catholic.
Sure.
But like I said, I wasn't really close to them before joining. That was, on me. But yeah, my mom visited, and when she visited, obviously her biggest concern was, oh my God, my son's in a cult. What if he has a sickle cell crisis and they don't take him to a doctor? Well, it just so happened the first time she visited, I had a sickle cell crisis and they did take me to a doctor. And so, her fears were just immediately dispelled.
Gotcha.
And so she was fine with it from then on. She didn't worry about me the whole time I was there.
Okay.
Whereas she did worry about me a lot when I was on my own in Detroit.
Okay. So, what let's so they cut you off from your families for the most part. Your family's allowed to come visit,
Yeah, they're
obviously.
allowed to visit, but you don't call them all the time, and
Right.
you don't maintain contact with them, especially if they're not friendly towards the community. That's the dividing point there.
I see. So if they're out there speaking, about how bad the community is, then of course they're not going to.